Beware, spoiler phobes, you've died and found a storm of spoilers.
She's our daughter.
Who are these people?
But she's never seen us before. 7 years ago, when she went missing, she was blind.
Mom?
Do you remember any of the events that led up to your disappearance?
We lived in a secret enclave just outside Moscow with many of the other recent rich. And the snow was 7 feet high, but you could still make out many big houses behind big gates, lost in the white. You asked me how I got my sight. The better story is how I lost it in the first place. I was not born blind. I remember the bright colored domes of St. Basil's Cathedral, the gray waters of the Moskva River.
Hello and welcome back to the Storm of Spoilers off season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and my favorite media portrayal of the afterlife is Beetlejuice's hellish waiting room. But hey, that's because I got a sense of humor.
Would you be the legs or the top?
The top?
Or the guy with the shrunk head?
That's more likely to be me.
I'd be the legs. Okay, so I'm Joanna Robinson. My favorite media depiction of the afterlife is the Robin Williams classic, What Dreams May Come, because who does not want to splash around in an oil painting for all eternity?
And I'm Neil Miller, and my favorite portrayal of the afterlife is All Dogs Go to Heaven, because there's a bunch of dogs there. That's it. That's
Do
the
you
whole thing.
Get to go to dog heaven if you're not a dog, Neil?
Well, no, the whole premise of the movie is that dogs go to, like, normal heaven.
But do we ever see any humans in normal heaven?
I
feel like we just see that angel dog.
I don't see how that's relevant to
that
question.
And the St. Peter is also a dog, isn't he?
Listen.
here's the deal. Here's what I'll say. I'm going to say a nice thing right now, which is this. If any human gets to go to dog heaven, it's you, Neil. Hashtag dog stuff.
I'm pretty great.
Not because you're a dog in a bad way.
I just
want to
be
dog
uncle.
Only man in dog heaven.
Well,
oh my God, Neil, that'd be so cute if you're the only man in dog heaven.
But there's a bunch of women there?
There could be ladies there.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, you can have ladies.
All right, sweet.
Yeah.
It works out great then.
I think we came up with a pitch for a Fox TV show just then.
Only man in dog heaven by Lord and Miller. Okay.
We are back with a themed off-season tour episode. We will be discussing the OA, the Netflix 8-episode first season, I guess, sci-fi spiritualist. We'll be discussing what the OA is, including spoilers for the series, based sort of on your guys' request. Last week's episode was a mailbag episode. If you're a fan of the show, you should go check that out. It was a very interesting, rambly, and I think enlightening episode about the three of us. But this week, back to the good old media, after Joanna Robinson reads us some reviews.
Hi, guys. I do have a review or two to read. This one is from Tim_Shu_. And I want to say that this review should be for Fighting in the War Room, because though it's 5 stars, the title of the review is "It's a podcast." Right? That's a Fighting in the
World. We're also a podcast, but yes.
Yeah, but okay. Dusted off my old iTunes account to leave a review for a podcast I look forward to every week. I've been loving the off-season tour. That was my impression of Dave.
Yeah.
Even for properties I wouldn't normally expect I'd care about. All the hosts are great. If you aren't listening to a bunch of their podcasts, you're doing it wrong. My secret, nefarious motive for leaving this review is to try and backdoor a question in. I missed my chance to get this in time for the listener emails podcast. Anybody watching / reading The Expanse on Sci-Fi? Books by James S. A. Corey. The books are for the most part terrific, and the first season of the show is a solid adaptation. It seems to be getting the budget that it needs to be good, and while not quite a premium cable level of production value, I think they're doing the best possible job they can for a Sci-Fi Channel original. The interesting thing for us smug Game of Thrones book readers is that this is based on a series that already has 5 or 6 books, but is still being written. Watching the show, having read the books, is a similar experience to watching Game of Thrones. Bonus that the authors actually put their books out in a timely manner. That's a sick George R. R. Martin burn. Keep up the great podcasting, Tim from Michigan. I have not watched a single second of The Expanse, nor read a single page of The Expanse. Guys, how about you?
No, me neither, but just through ignorance, not through, like, I haven't heard anything negative about it or anything.
No, I've heard that it is surprisingly high production value. That's not always the case over on the good old Sci-Fi. Neil?
I have watched The Expanse, mostly because it's got my dude Tom Jane in it. And it's pretty good. Sort of. Production value is good. And visually interesting. I guess it's one of those shows. I find this with most sci-fi shows. It's not that I lose interest. It's just that they get pushed down my to-do list too far. So, like, this happened with Wynonna Earp as well, which is a show I was, like, into when I was watching it, when I sat down with purpose to watch it. But eventually, I just stopped because I had other stuff to do. So The Expanse is a show that I like. It is a show that I would like to revisit, but I think it literally would be us saying, oh, we're going to do an episode on this. You have to catch up in order for me to get caught up. So that's where I'm at with The Expanse. I've never read the books, but now that I know that there are books, I might check them out.
I've been watching a couple episodes of Incorporated over on Sci-Fi, which is sort of the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck sci-fi show. Well, I mean, they're producers probably mostly in name. But that is also okay. But I think if I weren't motivated for other reasons, for work reasons, I wouldn't. Yeah, I would slip down the list in favor of shows like Sneaky Pete on Amazon, which is amazing. I just snuck that endorsement for Sneaky Pete in there. All right, Dave, I'm done.
All right. Well, that was a review for a sci-fi series, Expanse, that Joanna turned into a plug for two other series. So you got a lot of homework already. I got to check out The Expanse, though. That's like, what was my last sci-fi series that slipped like Neil described? The Noah Wiley, Steven Spielberg produced one.
The alien one. What was that?
That was a TNT show, Falling Sky.
Falling Sky, yeah. I got like 2 seasons into Falling Sky, and then it wasn't that I wasn't interested in picking it back up again. It's just like way down the list at that point.
Right.
Yeah. Third alien species showed up. Things got weird.
For a split second, I was really hoping you were going to say The Librarian, and you were going to confess to like a long-running affection for the Noah Wiley property.
I feel like I need to correct you guys before we get a bunch of emails. It is Falling Skies plural and The Librarians plural.
Oh, but Jesus. If someone was going to email me about librarians,
I only know this because I watch a ton of basketball on TNT. So I used to see commercials for Falling Skies, and now every commercial is The Librarians. So
all the Noah Wiley properties.
I know those shows really well without ever having seen a minute.
Actually, while we're still in the review segment, can I talk about some other feedback that we got really quickly?
Yeah.
Last week when we were doing our mailbag episode, we brought up The Big Bang Theory. And, Dave used the phrase, I think, blackface to refer to it, nerd blackface to refer to it. I used the phrase nerd minstrel show, which is the same as nerd blackface, basically, without the word black in it. And we got a good amount of pushback from our listeners for comparing this show to blackface, especially some of them pointed out, given the charged sort of racial climate in the country right now. Weirdly, one of the reasons why I feel kind of comfortable with us talking more comfortable than our listeners do, you know, especially given my lily white pallor, talking about this, is that I know that Dave knows more about menstrual shows, weirdly, than literally anyone I've ever met. I don't mean to oversell Dave, but like, you know, you know a lot about this weird and awful like era of entertainment, right?
Oh, yes. And I mean, it's only weird and awful in like a greater context. It also, by like anything that, you know, society makes up for entertainment purposes, has its little, you know, like seeds that lead into other things. But basically, the way I think we were both using it and the way that I would talk about minstrel shows historically is you're commodifying a culture that isn't yours in a way that is either gross mischaracterization or like over exaggeration of very specific things. I don't think we were trying to drag race into it, but we didn't pick a bad historical example either.
We certainly weren't trying to drag race into it, but yeah, exactly. I think what we meant was exactly what Dave said, and not like comparing it to being the same as blackface, but more like appropriation or exploitation of a culture you don't belong to, and making them look foolish for, you know, entertainment value. So that was the intent. Neil, did you want to chime in on this at all, or just skip to the next thing?
All I'm saying is that finally, we might be able to convince you guys to keep your dirty liberal politics out of this podcast. So this is a good step toward making this podcast great again. Sorry, I don't have anything serious to say. Like, if anyone was offended, sorry. It was really not the point of the whole thing. I'm just going to get us in more trouble by joking about it. So we should move on.
All right.
Hey. I mean, oh, man. At some point, we should have an off-podcast conversation amongst the three of us of why, like, Disney doesn't embrace this part of its past and animation history more often. But all I'm saying, interesting cultural things. I'm sorry that we ruffled some feathers, but I'm kind of glad that we, you know, stirred the issue that touched people. And like, you know, if you like The Big Bang Theory, that's great. I think I expressed why I didn't.
Right. But I guess it is fair to point out that like nerds being like turned into clowns with Green Lantern shirts for people's amusement is not the same as like, you know, the exploitation of a race for however, you know, like we're not really equating it at all. So, you know, anyway, okay, I'm done.
Hey, that was our minstrel show aside for this episode of Storm Spoilers. And when we come back, before we do the OA, we're actually going to stop in on a previous off-season tour stop. Stay tuned to see what that is.
Well, we have had a lot of requests to follow up on our episode, Sherlock episode that we did after episode one. Episode three of series four, which might be the last episode ever. Not even the creators are really sure. Just wrapped this past Sunday. And so I think we had a lot of listeners who wanted to hear if we had changed our impression of the season or if we thought it had gotten even worse since episode one. And I did kind of regret that we did our episode right after episode one rather than look at the season as a whole. So I guess I'll say quickly that I thought episode two was better, much better than episode one. And I thought episode three was kind of a messy disaster. Throughout, though, the actress, and I believe her name is Sean, but it's spelled S-I-N, but she's Irish, so I think it's Sean Brooke, who played Yorus and a number of other characters this season. I thought she was a great addition to the cast. I thought she did an amazing job throughout. And I thought she was quite the bright spot. I thought they were actually kind of creative in how they brought back Moriarty. I will give them some credit for that, like sticking to their guns that he's actually dead, but being able to use the actor anyway as much as they have. And yeah, all of that. But there were still a lot of problems this season. This season was bookended by some major here comes Joanna to talk about her favorite thing again. Problems like Mary Watson jumping in front of a bullet for Sherlock, or the whole entire Molly Hooper mess in the finale. I think Stephen Moffat, to a large degree, and I guess Mark Gatiss too, have no fucking idea what they're doing when it comes to women. And that's kind of okay, because Sherlock is a show about two dudes. But when they try to work the women in and then make it just really clear that they don't know what the fuck they're doing, that is aggravating to me. Dave, what are your thoughts?
I think that the season did pick up in the second half. I was able to get sort of all caught up in the momentum of the third episode. But then, like, the second it ended, and after my, like, warm feelings of, like, they'll always be there, those boys at Baker Street, which, like, I didn't mind because I'm a Sherlock softie. After that wore off, all the, you know, plot holes, like, poked through like Swiss cheese. So I'm going to say I'm basically where you are. I wouldn't say, like, what'd you say? Hot trash, flaming garbage? Other synonym for
I think I was watching
fire.
The episode when I texted that to you, so I was, like, in the heat of my anger. Yeah, so probably not hot steaming garbage, I think is what I said at the time, but
yeah, I mean, it worked better as, like, a fun refocusing on the two Holmes brothers and Watson for, like, what could be a series finale, but it didn't do what I really wanted it to do, which was sort of make a pod out of the three episodes that was all nice and neat. I don't think that there was a lot of emotional consistency of the characters between installments. It was more like chess piece moving them around, and, like, what frustrated me in earlier Sherlock seasons or series, where they would, you know, discount a mystery and just sort of never come back to it, started, like, applying to who people said they would care about or should be caring about.
Yeah.
And that isn't great, but it ended up, like, this season ended up being sort of like a little magic show that was thrilling while it's happening. But, like, I don't know if describing it to anybody is going to blow anybody's socks off. I don't know. I still stand by it. It was a better show about the characters that it built. I'm not sure if it was a great, you know, Sherlock Holmes adaptation.
If you want to keep your blood pressure even, don't ever read an interview Stephen Moffat gives. Just don't, because it's just always bad. And even he is like, well, if I say anything, I'm going to get in trouble. And I'm like, yes, because you say the stupidest shit. I did like that there will always be these boys in Baker Street, and I kind of enjoyed the montage at the end. And I do think Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman are very charming and very good at delivering their lines in serious and light moments. But the emotional roller coaster of Dr. John Watson, who's like, I'll never see you again. Okay, no, we're back to best friends again. It's okay. Like, we already did that in this very short series. We've already done that. And then also the, Stephen Moffat was so pleased with himself that Sherlock Holmes had a sister. And I was like, but you did that in the first episode with Dr. Watson. Dr. Watson had a sister, like a brother who was a sister. Like, you can't pat yourself on the back for being so clever when you've already done it. So anyway, I will stop trashing this series. I think they should end it there. Honestly, I think they should end it there and just move on with their lives. And I'm excited for Stephen Moffat not to be on Doctor Who anymore and get his fingers out of all of my geek properties. Thank you.
Someone will buy it in 7 years and we'll get a whatever that reunion season you were talking about in the Sherlock episode. I still like that idea.
No, I mean that's fine. But maybe with someone else writing. The other thing I will say is I feel like more and more Mark Gatiss is like, hey, what if I'm like the third main character? I created the show. Can Mycroft be really important, please? Whereas, you know, Mycroft started as he should have as like a very peripheral figure. And then it became this like love triangle between Mycroft and John and Sherlock. It was all very, you know, Basically, what I'm saying is Mark Gatiss wrote himself more into his own show, which I really can't blame him for.
Do you think he was a little mad about like his character getting the short shrift on Game of Thrones? So he's like, I'm going to be a bigger part of my own show.
I mean, I know that Dave's mad about the lack of banking on Game of Thrones.
That's why I brought it up.
I want to see Mark Gatiss talk about banking. Being like, the ledgers of the Iron Bank say that Dawn is down. Something, something.
hold on. Dorne would be up, okay? Let's just...
All right.
Dorne would be up. The crown is down.
Sure, but I mean, like, you think that construction that we saw is... okay. I don't know what resources they have. Minerals of Westeros. Okay, I'll Google that later, and then
Dave, I have a question for you. Would you collect like a trading card pack of Minerals of Westeros?
Are you asking me if I would play some sort of Settlers Catan Westeros? Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Nice.
Great.
Yes.
Oh, why isn't somebody making that? I would love that. It would be like Catan. Fire and Ice Edition. You'd have like dragons, or you'd like build a wall.
And you'd trade dragon glass for lamprey pie. That's not quite how Catan works, but we'll pretend it is. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think pie would be a base agricultural.
Well, but there isn't a base agricultural thing that's like only unique to Game of Thrones. Not that lamprey pie necessarily is, but.
Well,
I can figure out
there
something.
There might be. After I Google this thing, maybe we'll find a whole bunch of...
Minerals of Westeros.
Minerals of Westeros.
Well, there's like iron and Valyrian steel and dragon glass.
Well, I already said dragon glass. And yeah, I'll give you Valyrian steel. Iron, I don't think we can claim is unique to Westeros. But like, what about a crop or something?
There's iron wood in the Game of Thrones Telltale game.
Dornish wine.
Ooh. Werewood trees?
Yeah.
Werewood lumber?
Oh, that's gross.
Oh,
I just have so much werewood lumber. No, my gods!
All right, so you hear that, creators and settlers of Catan, please make a licensing deal with HBO. I mean, currently in my house, I have Game of Thrones Risk and Game of Thrones Clue and one other, I think. So it's not as if like HBO is sleeping on the board game opportunities.
And I played Star Trek Settlers of Catan, so it's not like they're not licensing that out to people. So
all right.
Synergize here.
Make it happen.
Got at least three customers.
Yep.
All right, are we out of Sherlock? Maybe forever?
We're out of the Sherlock Woods.
I look forward to seeing it and probably disagreeing.
Yeah, then we'll bring it back. We'll beat around the Stephen Moffat bag one more time.
How many times can Joanna say that Stephen Moffat's a piece of shit?
Even done the Doctor Who episode.
I like Stephen Moffat's stuff, but now I'm starting to worry that it's because I'm a dude. This is the influence Joanna has on me.
That's I like Bret Easton Ellis books, and I'm like, oh, all right.
Does this make me a terrible person?
Well, if I'm being really honest, I like some, you know, I like Coupling, which is a Stephen Moffat property. I liked his Jekyll. I liked that.
The first season of Sherlock, maybe?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like the first. I like two episodes each from the first and second season of Sherlock. And there are some Moffat Doctor Who episodes that I like.
Of the first two seasons. That's pretty good.
Yeah. 4/6, also known as 2/3. Yes.
Yeah.
Are we supposed to pause for that? Oh, burn, Neil. Fraction burn.
It's like, what do you call it when you like reduction
air horn.
Burn?
Do, 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 do.
But I think it actually has mostly like this goes back to the question that people ask me a lot, which is like, do you know too much about the stuff you're writing and podcasting about, and is it ruining your experience? And I don't want to say ruining, but probably I would like Stephen Moffat a lot more if I had never read a single interview.
Is it skewing your experience?
Sure is. Sure is.
There you go.
So.
Okay. Cool. Well, we're going to ruin your experience on this next thing, if that's cool.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Please do.
Yeah.
Neil, if you were to describe the OA to somebody like Joanna, who had no idea what the series was about, how would you describe it?
Let's see here. Okay, so Joanna, have you seen the movie Sound of My Voice?
Yes.
Okay, so it's about Britt Marling stars as a woman who comes back to her hometown, I guess, after being held captive. So, no, let me start over. Hold on, this is bad. You've seen The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, right?
Sure have.
Okay, so it's like that, but imagine if Kimmy Schmidt were blind when she got captured and then not blind when she came back.
And, whoa, what did John Hamm do to her in that hole?
And a guy who looks just like John Hamm, Jason Isaacs, captured her. Which means never go near anyone that looks like John Hamm or Jason Isaacs. And then she decided to seek out people to tell her story to. I guess that's the whole thing, right? That's it.
No, that's exactly the whole thing.
It's about basically a woman who comes back not blind after being blind, and she begins to tell her story. And at the end of the first episode, we find out that she is an orphan from a Russian oligarch.
Yes, and that was the end of the first episode.
And she says, which I thought was pretty clever, because they wait to show you the title of the wait to do the whole credit sequence till like the end, and it's like this big like rush of music and moment, like this wah opening up this whole world of like, oh my god, she's been dead a bunch of times, and oh my god, she's really a Russian child, and oh my god, there's way more to it than she's just not blind anymore.
I think the first four episodes of this series really start going in an interesting direction. Continue.
Yeah, so, and then it's all about her sort of unfurling her story about, basically it's a show about near-death experiences, and it's about this guy who's studying near-death experiences, we'll call him John Hamm, and he basically kidnaps these five people, and six by the end? He kidnaps some people who have had near-death experiences, and he's experimenting with trying to figure out the afterlife and like where the afterlife is, and is it a place? Is it somewhere you could go to and visit? And the idea is that the afterlife is like another dimension, which I'm all on board with, because that sounds way more fun than like heaven, except for the dog.
One idea is that the afterlife is another dimension. I think at some point, what are we calling him? John Hamm thinks that it's actually out in the rings of Saturn.
What? Oh, yeah, he thinks it's in like deep space because it sounds like the rings of Saturn.
Neil's like following one through line all the way to the end, which is why I like how he's talking about this show, because we're just going to go through each layer and it's going to slowly get weird.
And then you're going to tell me what OA means, right?
Oh,
sure.
Oh, will he?
are they? Okay.
The first thing you should know is that it is an acronym. The show, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, the show never fully defines what the acronym is.
Oh, I think she tells her mom in episode 11. I mean, but she's...
Wait, at some reason... At some point, someone in the afterlife tells her that she's the original...
Yes.
What is the A? She's the original what?
Well, okay. Big spoilers for the OA guys. In episode 11, she turns to her mom in the Olive Garden, who's the mom's just like freaked out because she's telling these five people, and they're five like otherwise misfits from around the town that she's drawn to her by being peaceful. So her mom's like, why won't you, I'm freaking out, anything could have happened to you, I'm your mom, why didn't you tell me anything? And she turns to her mom and she goes, I'm the original angel, and her mom slaps her. And me watching with the subtitles on, because that's a good way to do it, they capitalize original angel. And I think it's in like episode, I don't know, 5 or 6 where she first says like, we're angels. And I was, binging this for this episode, and stopped to make myself a sandwich and was talking to my girlfriend, and I'm like, they just said the word angels, and I swear if the title's an acronym, I'm going to moan so loud you're going to be able to hear me all over the apartment. And then at the end of episode 11, it was just,
She is the original angel?
Yes. Yep. So, and that's another big part of the story, one of the many layers, is that at some point, she and the other people who have had these near-death experiences and been captured and live in this like terrarium in this guy's basement cave, they start believing that they are angels and that they are able to die and come back for a reason, because it's not just that they died once and came back, it's that this guy has captured them and he is killing them and bringing them back. Like, he's forcing them to die and come back every time so that he can see what happens. Okay, when they die.
He's recording. He's figured out a way to like record by like sticking tubes in the ears, like the sounds of the afterlife.
Right, because he is convinced, and the show seems to sort of make up its own science, that there is a sound that is emitted from the body or around the body when someone dies, and I guess their soul leaves or their ethereal version of them leaves the body. So he's basically just like killing these people over and over and over again and bringing them back. And so they start believing that they are angels, and they start seeing in their afterlife that there are these movements that they're being taught, five essential movements that would allow them to basically move through dimensions. So the idea is, if they can learn all five movements, they can do them together with the, what do they say in the show? The right
feeling or something like
that? It's basically like, it's like you have to do the movements with exact precision and like pizzazz. And
like intention?
Intention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you do it all correctly, you get to move through dimensions. So this is their escape plan. They're going to do the movements, go to another dimension, and not be in captivity anymore.
Yeah. So that takes them 7 years to figure that plan out.
Right. And it's basically capoeira. Like, it's weird.
It's like a little bit of that, a little bit of interpretive dance. There's some things from their dreams that we see are like part of the dance later on, but some things make no sense.
Right.
So, okay. So here's my question. Like, I don't want to bore our listeners by having you guys explain all of the OA to me, since like, presumably if they're listening to this, they've watched it, but like, but that was delightful. And thank you. I have no idea what the fuck is going on, but here's my question. The common reaction seems to be, oh my God, this show is so good, for like, what, 2/3 or 4/6, if you're using Neil's math, of the season. And then the last third, or maybe less, last fourth, people are like, sucks. So, like, would you say that that was your roller coaster experience with this show?
Sure. I mean, the last episode itself has a lot in it to sort of, I mean, make you question what came before, presents an entire alternate reading of the series as maybe true, which I actually liked more. And then right at the end, just for some spice, throws in a school shooting.
Yes.
Right before the season closes out. So basically, what this series ends with a "Oh, Captain, my Captain" moment, but they all these people who are hearing the stories about the movements are doing the movements at the school shooter, and then as the lunch attendant tackles the guy who's bewildered by this choreographed dance going on in front of him by five complete strangers, it gets tackled. He tackles the gunman. Gunman's gun goes off and shoots Britt Marling's character, who was like watching through the window. And so
he shot the original angel.
Shot the original angel.
What the fuck?
Which they present as possibly the way that you actually are going between these dimensions, because it's not like she hasn't like died before. So that, combined with the fact that a character also in that same finale episode goes into the OA's house and finds a whole bunch of books in an Amazon box about Russian oligarchs, about angels, about near-death experiences, that suggest she could have just been through a completely traumatic 7-year kidnapping and created this story as like a reason to like stay alive, which it's sort of more interesting, but not after you've been invested in maybe seeing like a portal to another dimension. Because it's like when they die for both Britt Marling's Prairie and for another one of the characters, Homer, we actually get to go into their dreams for a little while. So it's not like we never see the other side and it's constantly a mystery. We see, I guess, what her narrative is of the other side, what she's telling these kids, her experience. But I guess like it fudges the line between being a sci-fi series and a new agey series and then just declines to take a position at the end, which I could see where it's like frustrating. But like if it does come back for a season two, it's going to have to take a stance that I think is going to alienate whoever embraced what they thought was either a sci-fi series or a, like a new agey series.
Yeah, I guess that's a big question because I don't understand the way it ends. It leaves the audience to decide whether the entire story was real or not. The characters within the story, like the five people who are like her audience, her disciples, I like to call them the disciples of the original angel. They clearly believe it. And
why would they ever, if they have that ending, why would they ever come back for a second season?
That's a good question.
I mean,
why would they ever answer that question?
If apparently Britt Marling has said that this was conceptualized with the second season idea, so they know what that would be. But like, I don't, it's a hell of a way to end a first season and then come back and like be something else. Like the only time I can think about like a show like pulling this off is maybe like 24 that just like killed its, you know, female protagonist and then came back and was like, now he's an unstoppable killing machine for the rest of this show. But like that's what they're gonna have to do, because either Britt Marling comes back and it's like, guess what, there's other dimensions, or like I don't think I'm gonna stand for another 8 episodes of is there not crazy dance moves you could do with the right feeling that opens up doors to other dimensions, or they just kill people. Is that what they do if you do? Just so many unanswered questions.
Well, and what's interesting is that there is a moment in the show, although now that I'm thinking about this out loud, I'm realizing that this is part of her story, so it could also have been false, where they do the dance moves and they heal someone. This actually happens twice.
Yeah.
But it's part of her story. So, yes, you're right. In order to do a season two, the show would have to decide if within the real world of the show, whether the story that she told is true or false, unless they go off and tell a whole different set of stories or characters, or unless they have her like wake up with amnesia or something, or like there's no way to have a second season of the show in my mind and attach it to the first season show. What I will say is it's a pretty clever show. It's an interesting concept, and if anybody's going to figure it out, it's probably the people that made the show in the first place. So I'm interested to see where they go with it. I feel like I liked it more than some people.
You guys, so I've been listening with joy and pleasure.
Listening to our tale.
Everything that you had to tell me. But I just like Google image searched the OA GIFs to see if I could see these dance moves.
Mm-hmm. The movements?
Nobody told me there were spirit fingers involved.
Oh,
very specific spirit fingers. Like they're sort of like a peeling away or breaking. I forget the actual wording, but there's discussion of it. Don't worry. That's in the series.
And then also a movement that sort of looks like you're smoking a joint.
You're eating a bird.
Oh, you're eating up what? You guys, what is this show?
She eats a bird in the afterlife.
Yeah, that's how she gets the first movement.
Yeah.
And the knowledge that she's the original angel.
I got a better one, and we should have you react to this live on the show. I'm going to send you a YouTube link to a fan reenacting the five movements.
Yes. Oh,
that's the best thing.
You guys, P.S., the first, like, if you Google image search the OA GIFs, I would say the first, like, three rows are pretty much dance movements. It's like Emery Cohen and Britt Marling.
Right.
And this kid in his bedroom. And I guess the school shooting. Wow, this is amazing.
Yeah. This fan seems to basically have him to have it down.
I'm ready. Wait. Okay.
Oh, he's got the peeling fingers.
Yeah. Okay. At one point, they explain the finger thing as like you almost have to do it as if you're breaking your fingers.
Wait. Do you have to hold your groin while you do the flying bird one? Because this is what this fan does.
Maybe.
Oh, I don't know. The hand in the mouth is so distracting that it's like hard to figure it out.
This guy and his hair and his sweater.
Right.
This is amazing.
And so his like mountaintop that he's on.
Yeah, wherever he is.
Here's what's good. I mean, the things that I like about the OA end up being the things that they'd probably have to jettison if they're going to like come back for another.
He did a tutorial. I'm sorry, Dave. You were talking about story structure.
You laugh, but if just two of you do that, you could bring somebody back from the dead, Joey.
Literally, if you do all these movements next to somebody with what does that lady have in the movie in the show? ALS. You can
ALS.
Cure ALS.
Oh, fuck you, Ice Bucket Challenge.
Yeah,
I'ma eat a bird.
So the atmosphere that it sets up of like a mystery show that's also going to be a drama about like outcasts for the first three, four episodes is great and is actually a show that if you, I think, gave it 10 episodes to sort of build on and to actually tell a trauma story that, you know, for some reason she decided she only wanted to bestow on people that actually like needed her pain or something. These things that they like allude to or like lean into for a little bit, but then pull back with all like this angel dimension hopping whatnot. I think, and all the stuff with like Riz Ahmed, who plays a FBI psychiatrist, who shouldn't be in her house when he is in her house at one point, but other than that, like, makes really good, you know, plot and observations about the OA's behavior. But like, after it starts committing too much to this really odd idea of like motion technology, and then we spend like a whole episode with Jason Isaacs's like Hap, like serial killer, which sort of like. I guess he is technically a serial killer who's like, I guess that establishes him as real or like in the narrative of things that could be happened and could have not happened. Like this guy is probably the guy that abducted her. But like, I don't know if you're going to come back in season two and make it something that I like, you sort of have to like leave out all like take the entire town full of misfits and just not deal with them again and sort of tell me more about what actually happened between this abductor and her. But I feel like once you name your series the OA, it's like, is it going to be another acronym next season? Or are we still sticking with this angel idea so much that I should be thinking about, like, is Homer's soul, you know, like, traveling to somewhere? Or is she going to be able to bring them back from the other side? And there's a whole cliffhanger aspect, Joanna, that we didn't describe to you, where she escapes, but the other four captives are left behind. So she's telling these misfit people and teaching them the moves with the hopes that she could open a portal to go save her friends, which apparently means getting shot by a guy in a cafeteria, school cafeteria.
Yeah, maybe the next season will be called the NP. It's just the normal person.
Normal person.
I will say this. I will agree that there is a really interesting through line in this series about pain and survival and sort of like a shared sense of therapy, because in the real time, in the modern or current present day where she's telling the story, you know, the people that she picks are people that are in vulnerable positions or that have their own struggles that are really serious and big. One of them is a young trans person who is sort of trying to transition. The other is a woman who's just lost her brother after having kind of a turbulent relationship with him. The other one is a kid who has like serious anger issues. One's kind of got a drug addiction, and so on and so forth. And I forget what the other one's deal is. Oh, he has no parents. That always sucks.
Yeah.
So it's, and in the end, like the Riz Ahmed character is really interesting. Well,
Phyllis from The Office.
Yeah. Phyllis from The Office. She's the one who had the brother who died.
Oh, she was the one who had the brother. That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot for a second. I just kept being like, oh, Phyllis.
Well, yeah. And so they all have these like different levels of personal sort of struggle that they're going through. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff that happens between Prairie, the main character, and the FBI guy, played by Riz Ahmed, about sort of the communal nature of healing. And that's what makes it really interesting if you assume that all the angel stuff is not true.
Right. And I think the stuff with the parents gets more interesting if all the angel stuff isn't true. Right. So it's like the parents are either these wells of, you know, infinite patience with somebody trying to heal, or they were like evil people that medicated the original angel for like most of her life and drove her out of the house.
Wait, I still don't understand the Russian oligarch orphan situation.
So her dad is like this rich, owns like a whole bunch of mineral mines or something in Russia. And there's an attempt on like the private school bus that she's going to one day. And that's how she loses her sight, is that's the time she dies. The first time she sees like her afterlife totem lady, Katun, which is just like, I think like the ancient word for like Mrs. like Khan would be the sir. Anyway, she takes her eyesight and returns her back to life. The Russian dad is like freaked out that, you know, the Russian mafia is after her. So he sends her to America to live with her aunt, but is sending a whole bunch of money. So she has this like great American life in private school and is learning how to speak English and play the violin. But then her dad supposedly dies. She thinks that he faked his death so they could eventually be together. But it doesn't matter because her aunt thinks that she's dead, and it turns out her aunt's like this prostitute and now doesn't have money to like take care of her, so she has to like leave the private school. Anyway, this aunt prostitute is also running a baby like business of all the prostitute children, and these parents show up to buy this baby boy and instead find this blonde girl and are like, we'll take her instead.
Right, because she's blind, and they know that she won't.
Guys, what?
She's definitely not Anastasia. She's blind. But yeah, and so the parents, they never come down on one way or the other if the parents know that she thinks she's like basically Russian royalty or not. There's an idea that maybe the mom does, because she keeps like this note she leaves when she runs away and then gets kidnapped. I don't know. It's all sort of like twisted around as to how real the whole Russian backstory is. But in terms of like a thing you're watching in episode two, it's great. You're like, tune in, first hour is like, you know, the Descendants, but not on Hawaii. And then the second hour is like weird buses blowing up and afterlife eye taking and stuff. And, you know, but then it's, then it goes into weird captivity drama, and it gets weirder.
You know how we talk about Netflix shows, which we do a lot on this show, and we always talk about how maybe they could be a little shorter, because they did not. It's tough to get a lot. It's tough to get enough to fill like 8 or 10 episodes. This show is the weird one that a lot of stuff happens in 8 episodes, like a lot.
Yeah.
It's really hard to break down, because it's not only is it a lot of things happen, but a lot of very complex, strange, sort of divergent things happen in this show, where it's constantly, it's got like a twist every like 5 minutes. So it's very interesting to watch and experience. It's a great binge show because it ties together, because eventually they tie it all together with the dance moves and the school shooter and the is it real? Is it not real? But there's just so many threads out there that it creates that I think is really both fascinating and overwhelming. So
it's an interesting thing to have as a television series, but I'm not quite sure what it's trying to communicate, which then retroactively takes away its reason for existing, right? So, like, I don't know. There's the stuff we're talking about dealing with trauma. I definitely think there's a great way to deal with that. But then there's whole swaths of this that take, like, a sci-fi Pan's Labyrinth or Silence of the Lambs hybrid, where, like, people are just getting murdered over and over again, and, like, really weird, you know, is he going to escape in Cuba when, like, the serial killer takes him on a trip? Just, like, there's a lot in here that I wish came to more focus. I wish this was the kind of, like, series that was built for streaming in the way that I feel like if I, you know, just watched it again, maybe I'd see that writing on the wall, or maybe I'd get that answer. But I don't think the series is Mystery Box series. I think it's like some sort of new agey drama that like picked the word angel out of a hat, because it's not like we're talking about Christianity or anything either. It's really odd. And I think like if it did end, even if it ended with like a season one Lost sort of like bigger question mark, I feel like that would have felt like stick the landing. The like school shooting thing is just too ambiguous to potentially have that be the end of the story.
Yeah, what I find interesting about this is it deals with a lot of multiverse theory, which I thought Dave would be over the moon for. But it's only like one small piece of it, so they could dig into that. If I had to sum up this show without giving any plot details, I guess, the themes of this show are twofold. And I think that I almost think that you could draw the same conclusion from The Leftovers, as far as I am familiar with The Leftovers, which is people deal with grief in very weird ways, and the afterlife is bonkers balls. Like, those are the two ideas of this show. Like, the afterlife, anytime you go into the exploration of the afterlife, it's going to get weird, and also grief is hard. So, there's that.
Sure. And if you're ever in a dream, or you think you might be dead, eat anything that's alive.
Yeah, eat the fish.
And you'll get the movements.
Right, like a fish or a bird.
Mm-hmm.
Or...
I guess that's like a spoiler for the fifth movement. We don't need to spoil all of it.
We can't. The fifth movement's the big one. It's like the final Cylon. It's like two episodes are dedicated to the fifth movement.
Yeah, I can't just come out and talk about the fifth movement. Well, sorry,
here's the last
Joanne.
Thing. Here's what. Fair enough. You have to have something that you earned that is yours from having sat through all of the OA. But
that's right. I know where the fifth movement is.
But my question is, you know, if anyone is still listening to this after we've described what the OA is, the pressure, and maybe this is just unique to people who do podcasts and write about TV, and maybe normal TV viewers don't feel this pressure, but the Netflix pressure is real, because I had about 11 billion people ask me if I watched the OA, and I was just very stubbornly like, I don't want to watch this show. This doesn't look like something I want to watch. From what everything I've read, it does not stick the landing. So I don't have time and I don't want to do it. And a lot of people were like very thirsty for my opinion on it. And, so I'm just wondering if you guys ever feel like pressure or like you're letting people down if you don't watch a particular TV show. Because it's hard for me, actually, weirdly, stupidly, to stick to my guns and say, no, I'm not going to watch the OA. usually I end up going like, oh, okay, I'll watch it for you guys, or like whatever. But, you know, do you guys ever feel that, or is that my own like weird psychosis?
I feel that a lot, but the thing is, like, my list of things to catch up on is already like so long that I don't know if it makes anybody feel any better just to know that it's on my list. Like, that could mean anything. So, but yeah, I feel bad. I, especially knowing that when I love the shows that I love, when I want to talk about them the most is when they're happening to me. And I wish that more, but they were just happening to more people I was in contact with. What hurts me is not that I am not participating in some weird cultural thing. It's that I'm unable to like engage with people at the height of their geekiness for a thing because I just don't have time to get there at any given moment.
Yeah, and I guess I only feel like I don't. It's weird because there's a lot of shows that I've done this with where it's like Mr. Robot. Like I just don't watch it or. I feel bad that the people who really do like it and find a lot of value in stuff like that, they don't end up getting represented in like my year-end list, for example. I think when I put out my year-end TV list, people were like, "What? No Mr. Robot?" And I'm like, "I don't watch Mr. Robot." So those are the only times when I feel bad. The Netflix thing is real. I think because of the ease of access to it, more people are watching it. I do think that there's something special about the OA in this sense. It's different. Like it's definitely different. It is not cut from the standard cookie cutter TV show formula that people are used to. And I think we hear all the time from ourselves and from other people that, you know, we wish that there was more unique content out there, more unique shows telling unique stories that are not more superheroes and not more of the same stuff. So I think there is kind of a special thing to people wanting to connect our advocacy for unique entertainment to the show that they watch that they feel is really unique because it is. So I think mm-hmm. that there's that kind of pressure with a show like The OA because it really is way out there. I mean, it's not way out there to me because I've seen the other things that Brent Marling and Zal Bhamangeli have done together. And this is like,
whoa,
this
buddy,
is like the
you
same
nailed
thing.
That name. I'm
oh,
impressed.
Yeah. No, I've spent years. I met the guy at Sundance once and could no idea how to say it. But like if you've seen their other stuff, this kind of falls in line. Like it's basically like Britt Marling plays someone who sits people down in a circle and tells them a story. You know, one time she's a cult leader.
I mean, I think that's the thing. Like I've seen Sound of My Voice and I've seen The East and I was just sort of like, you know what? Like actually I like Britt Marling a lot. A, she definitely has original angel hair. Like she's got the best hair.
She
film,
has a pretty great
period.
Hair. Yeah.
I liked her in the film Arbitrage, which was like not a great film, but with Richard Gere. But she played Richard Gere's daughter, and she was quite good in it. So I was like, okay, so it's not that I have a problem with Britt Marling as an actress or a performer. It's that I'm just not interested in this one story that she and
Zal Bhamangeli.
Zal seem intent
Zal
on retelling.
Batman. Jolie. So it's like Batman.
Zal
Angelina
Batman
Jolie.
Jolie. Okay. Sorry. I don't mean to be like, ooh, what is this non-white name that
no,
I can't
it's
pronounce?
It's like
sorry,
the
guys.
Hardest name I've ever had to work on. Like it's
but tough. The story that they're interested in telling is not for me, and that's okay. But they just keep telling the same version of it. And so that's another reason why I was like, oh, you know what? Netflix show from Britt Marling, I'm okay. I don't need to.
Yeah, no, it's very on brand. It's very in the Britt Marling wheelhouse where it's like Sound of My Voice, Another Earth, The East. Well, The East is a little different, but
The East is a little different. Yeah.
And The OA, like now we sort of have a Britt Marling trilogy with Sound of My Voice, Another Earth, and this, where it's like, okay, cool. She tells stories about like other dimensions and cults, and you have to believe in Britt Marling in order for this all to work. So, which I do. I believe in Britt Marling. If Britt Marling showed up at my house and was like, sit down, I want to tell you a tale, I would sit down. Like, that's just how I work.
I can't promise that I wouldn't either. Her hair is very shiny, okay?
Like, you maybe secretly if I want to like, watch the OA. I feel like you're
if she
you're
came, if she showed
it.
Up at my door and she was like, Joanne, I have a story to tell you. And I'm like, at the end of it, will you tell me how you get your hair to be that shiny? And she said, yes, I would sit down and listen to whatever. Even if she was like, eat a bird. I'm like, okay, will that make my hair shiny? And she's like, yeah. I was like,
it started when I was a Russian orphan.
And I lost my sight in a bus crash.
All right, Britt Marling. Cool. Let's do it.
Okay, Britt Marling. Okay. All right.
Okay, so that's,
OA.
That's the OA. OA.
Original Angel.
Oh, okay.
Original? Yeah. Oh, The Offspring's going to be at the end of this podcast. That was the moment Dave realized that was happening.
Anything else we want to say about any of the things that we talked about?
Oh, I don't know. I think we could just move directly into our next week preview.
All right.
Neil, you're gonna go to Park City this week, right?
Yes.
Go check out some movies.
At the end of this week, I'm headed to Sundance, the Sundance Film Festival, where I first discovered Britt Marling. Very good cohesion here this week. And then next week on the podcast, I will most likely be on the podcast. Where we are doing another, we'll see. It depends on the internet in my Sundance condo, which is always sort of a roll the dice. It's very Russian roulette. Like you're either you either get to move on with your life or you're dead instantly.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
You could do the right motions to get internet, but if you don't have the correct intent, it's not going to come through.
Right. And worst case scenario,
these are references. I understand.
I could always do it from the very famous and very high used Burger King in Park City, the one fast food place in Park City that has free Wi-Fi. Anyway, but we are doing, whether I'm here or not next week, we are going to do a Thought Bubble episode, which is another thing. It's basically all requests month.
Yeah.
On Storm Spoilers.
Pretty much.
You wanted a Sherlock update, you got it. You wanted an OA discussion, we think you've got it. And you wanted some more Thought Bubble, which you're going to get next week, which means comics talk. We also have Flash, Supergirl, and those other shows that are on the CW, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow, all coming back next week. So we'll discuss as much of that as we can. Because we record in the middle of the week.
We should pick up like a word of the week for like bonuses. Like what? Ike Perlmutter? Think we're going to talk about Ike Perlmutter next week, Joanna?
Yes. Why not? Probably.
Ike Perlmutter. I heard he's going to be the chief entertainment secretary of the new administration.
He's going to be making my comic purchases very difficult for the foreseeable future.
But hey, maybe he will get drafted into the administration. Then you can start buying Marvel comics again.
Hey, yeah, if he divests, right. Which, you know, will that would make one person I want to divest.
Anyway.
You know, I have a list.
So we'll do our best to keep our pinko leftist politics out of next week, but no promises. But yes, Thought Bubble, which is a thing where we talk about comics. I don't really have anything. What else? We're going to read some comics. We're going to talk some comics. We'll talk about the state
probably
of.
Gonna talk we're probably going to talk Riverdale.
Riverdale.
Which is,
yes.
The upcoming Archie adaptation on the CW. iZombie's coming back. Like basically, like all the comic book shows.
Ooh, you know what else we could do? About. Joanna and I, at the very least, could talk a little Legion.
Yes, Legion.
You've guys seen some Legion?
I've seen three episodes of Legion.
I have screeners that I could watch on the plane if I have plane Wi-Fi. Or at the airport while I'm snowed in to wherever I'm going.
I like this promise, but don't you guys renege on me if you're going to tell me about Legion.
Oh, Dave, I could tell you about Legion right now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So yeah, so all kinds of comic stuff.
So those are a lot of rambling promises for next week, but we'll deliver something that you'll enjoy or not.
either way,
like this week.
Yeah, either way, you can write us a review on it.
Sure. I guess until then, Neil, where can people find more of your work around the internet as you travel about?
You can get me on Twitter @rejects. You can follow my Sundance coverage, filmschoolrejects.com. You can also Don't forget, follow the show at Storm of Spoilers. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Storm of Spoilers. And send us an email if you'd like, stormofspoilers@gmail.com. We love your emails.
And Joanna?
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeWroteThis. You can listen to me talk about general pop culture on a podcast called Gen Pop. You can hear me debate Lord of the Rings on Amy Nicholson's podcast, The Canon. Or you can hear me talk about the Oscar race on Little Gold Men.
So many podcasts.
It has a lot of podcasts.
So little time.
I'm glad The Canon's back. You and David Ehrlich on The Canon means I am back to enjoying The Canon on a regular basis. Welcome back, Canon. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You could read me. Oh, hey, guys. There's a new website called The Splash Report. I will be back there doing weekly columns about superhero movies and Star Wars.
Oh, nice. Yay.
So back on those beats, which means I'm going to get back into the crazy rumor mill about your, you know, Star Wars Episode 8 converies and what have you. If that doesn't make sense to you, you can follow me on Twitter at DA7E for my other work and find the rest of my podcasts at fightinginthewarroom.com, including back episodes of this one right here. Until next week, guys. Okay, wait, I can do this. We'll see you later.